Vekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vekatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling something huge, maybe the biggest quest there is, the search for happiness. We're diving into a really remarkable guide, The Art of Happiness, a handbook for living. It's this unique collaboration between the 14th Dalai Lama and the psychiatrist, Dr. Howard C. Cutler.
It really is a fascinating book.
Our mission today really is to unpack their approach. It's quite systematic, quite radical even, looking at how you cultivate genuine, lasting contentment. This isn't, you know, just tips for a better mood for a day or two.
No, not at all. It's about changing things from the inside out.
And, you know, looking at the sources, this couldn't be more relevant right now. It feels like we're facing this huge paradox in modern life.
Definitely. We've got more material wealth, more technology than ever before, yet, well, look around. Anxiety, depression, just this general sense of dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
It seems rampant.
It really does.
And that conventional idea, the sort of Western model that, you know, success or money or status, that's what brings happiness. It's just not holding up, is it?
Clearly not.
The core insight here, I think, is that we fundamentally misunderstand where real lasting joy comes from. It's not something you find out there. It's actually an internal skill,
yeah.
A discipline you have to actively, well, train.
Exactly. And the real power, I think, comes from the two guides we have. On one hand, you've got His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, Tenzin Gyatso. His authority is immense, obviously rooted in deep Buddhist philosophy, but it's also incredibly practical.
Mm.
I mean, he won the Nobel Peace Prize back in 89.
Yeah.
And think about the suffering he's personally endured, exile, losing his country.
Mm.
Yet he maintains this just incredible warmth, this calm. He doesn't just talk about patience. He kind of embodies it.
He really does. And then balancing that deep Eastern wisdom, you have Dr. Howard Cutler, the American psychiatrist.
Right.
And Cutler acts as our, you know, our stand-in. He brings that modern scientific psychological viewpoint. He's constantly pushing back a bit, testing the Dalai Lama's ideas against skepticism and real-world clinical problems.
That dialogue format is key, isn't it?
It's the secret sauce, I'd say. It stops the book from just being, you know, abstract philosophy. It's ancient wisdom, but it's filtered through this practical 21st century lens.
Mm-hmm.
So the result is actionable advice for pretty much anyone, religious or not.
Okay, so if we peel back the layers then, what's the absolute core message, the central idea of this whole thing?
Simply put, happiness isn't just luck. It's not a destination you arrive at. It's an art. It's a science. It's a discipline. And the crucial part is it can be systematically learned. Anyone can do it if they commit to the mental training involved.
What I find so interesting is how the book just methodically takes apart these common myths we all seem to buy into. You know, that joy comes from external stuff, the bigger salary, the promotion, even just sensory pleasure.
Right, the fleeting stuff.
Yeah. And instead, it guides you inward. It argues that the only stable sources of joy are things like compassion, genuine warmth, human connection, internal states.
It really does feel like a kind of operating system update for your mind. And it's comprehensive. It covers strategies for handling really destructive emotions, anger, hatred, anxiety, but also techniques for deliberately cultivating the positive ones, like patience and empathy.
And it changes how you see adversity, too.
Totally. Suffering isn't framed as this enemy you have to avoid at all costs. It's presented as, well, inevitable, yes, but also potentially useful, a catalyst even, for growth, for resilience, for deeper empathy.
Okay, so if happiness is the ultimate goal, where does the book suggest we start? What's the foundation?
Well, right at the beginning, chapter one makes this really critical point. The purpose of life is to seek happiness. That's our fundamental drive, an inherent right, you could say.
But it immediately makes a distinction, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Between that temporary sensory pleasure, you know, the quick hit from buying something new or having a great dessert, and the lasting kind of happiness, the one rooted in your mind and heart.
And this connects to that idea of hedonic adaptation, the sources mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah.
The mental treadmill effect. You get that big win, the raise, the new house, whatever, and yeah, you feel great for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But your mind just adjusts so quickly. Your emotional baseline resets. And soon you're looking for the next external thing to give you that permanent fix.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work long term because we adapt.
Which forces us back inside, essentially. And that leads straight into the huge emphasis the book puts on warmth and connection. Chapter 3 talks about redefining intimacy.
Right. Not just as romantic love, which is how we often think of it, but as something much broader, this sense of universal compassion, of connection to others.
And here's where it gets, kind of radical and counterintuitive.
Go on.
The claim is that focusing on other people's well-being, practicing compassion, is actually the most practical, even self-interested strategy for your own happiness.
It sounds paradoxical, doesn't it? But it's not just presented as a moral ideal.
No, there's a mechanism.
Exactly. When you genuinely focus your attention outward, trying to ease the suffering of others, you naturally kind of starve that self-centered loop of anxiety and insecurity that causes so much of our own pain. Compassion dissolves the fear that comes from always worrying about me and mine. It replaces that insecurity with a kind of inner confidence.
So it's like the ultimate self-help through selflessness. It's quite profound.
It is. But, you know, it sounds good in theory. What about when people are dealing with real, intense pain? The idea that suffering might be optional. That can sound a bit dismissive, maybe.
Like spiritual bypassing, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's tackle that directly.
Right.
Chapter 5 introduces this concept of the two arrows.
This might be one of the most empowering ideas in the entire book, I think.
Explain it.
Okay, so the first arrow, that's the painful event itself. It's unavoidable. Life throws things at us. Illness, loss, betrayal. That arrow hits you. It's part of being human.
Right. Unavoidable.
But the second arrow, that's our mental and emotional reaction to the first arrow. It's the bitterness, the resentment, the self-pity, the anger we layer on top of that initial wound.
And the core teaching is...
that second arrow is entirely optional. That emotional overlay, that's where most of our actual misery comes from. Not the event itself, but our reaction to it.
And chapter 6 goes even further, arguing that adversity isn't just something to get through, it's actually valuable.
Yes. Hardship is seen as a kind of spiritual practice. Once you've personally gone through significant pain, your ability to empathize, your determination, it deepens. You can actually use suffering as a tool to strengthen your mind rather than letting it crush you.
Okay, so the mind is the main arena here. How does the book suggest we handle those big internal roadblocks? Things like, say, anger, destructive emotions.
The Dalai Lama is very direct about anger and hatred. He calls them poisons. And crucially, they poison your own peace first and foremost, long before they ever really harm the person you're angry with. They corrode your inner stability.
So what's the remedy?
It's sort of a two-pronged approach. First, actively train patience and tolerance. It's a practice. Second, use analytical reasoning. Really dissect the anger with logic.
How does that work?
You ask yourself, is this rage actually helping me right now? Or is it harming me? Is it truly logical to sacrifice my own peace of mind for this temporary surge of hostility? By seeing how futile and damaging it is, you start to loosen its grip.
And that connects neatly to what the book says about anxiety, too, right? Chapter 10 links chronic anxiety and low self-esteem back to, well, being too self-centered.
Exactly. Worrying constantly about what do others think of me or am I good enough? That excessive focus on the self.
And the antidote consistently throughout the book is...
shifting your focus outward. Mm-hmm. Building genuine self-worth isn't really about pumping yourself up with affirmations. It's about investing your energy in the well-being of others. That, paradoxically, builds a much more stable, honest, and robust inner foundation for yourself.
Okay, let's try and synthesize some of these powerful ideas. The book really does work like a mental training manual. What are the absolute core themes that, you know, really stick?
All right. Theme one, I'd say. Happiness is an internal skill, not an external condition.
Right. Which means, you know, just like getting good at a sport or playing an instrument, lasting joy needs consistent, systematic mental practice. You don't just luck into deep contentment.
You have to work at it. Theme two, the supreme importance of compassion as a pragmatic choice.
Yeah, this is the really mind-bending part for many, I think. It's not just presented as the right thing to do morally. It's actually the most effective, almost science-backed antidote to our own self-centeredness, our anxiety, that sense of isolation we often feel.
So being kind is actually deeply self-serving in the best way possible.
Exactly. Theme three, the transformative power of perspective.
Mm-hmm. This idea that we have immense control over our own experience just by deliberately choosing how we frame things mentally. That ability to pause, to reframe a difficulty, that's the crucial difference between just feeling pain, which is inevitable, and actual suffering.
The book is also full of these really concise ideas, phrases that just capture complex philosophy so well. Let's share a few of those key ones.
Good idea. Okay, first, the foundational premise. The very purpose of life is to seek happiness. Simple, direct. It gives everyone permission, really, to prioritize their well-being. It says this is our fundamental drive.
And then the master key, the one that links helping others to helping ourselves. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion.
So concise. It perfectly captures that interconnectedness. Then there's the one about dealing with tough times. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional.
That's the two arrows right there. The clear line between what happens to you and how you choose to respond internally.
Precisely. And finally, maybe the direct challenge to our usual way of thinking. The ultimate source of happiness is not money and power, but warm-heartedness.
Yeah, that one hits home. Stop chasing the external volatile stuff. Start investing in stable internal qualities.
Okay, so we get the concepts. How do we actually put this stuff into practice?
Yeah.
What are some concrete things you can do, like tomorrow?
Let's start with what the book calls analytical meditation. This isn't about just clearing your mind. It's more like active mental surgery.
Okay.
So when you feel a difficult emotion coming up, maybe jealousy or anger, you consciously stop and you dissect it with logic. You analyze, where did this come from? What effects is it having on me? Is it rational? You keep picking it apart until the emotion starts to lose its hold on you.
Interesting. Okay, tip two, reframe everyday frustrations. Use that power of perspective we talked about.
Give an example.
Right. You're stuck in that horrible traffic jam, feeling the rage build up. Instead of just going there, you consciously pivot your thought. Maybe you think, okay, this is annoying, but it's a minor inconvenience compared to what millions face daily. Or even just, unexpected time to listen to this deep dive properly.
Ah, good one. Okay, tip three is about actively cultivating compassion, specifically using the compassionate wish technique.
Tell us about that.
As you go about your day passing strangers, maybe dealing with a tricky coworker, you silently, internally, wish them well. You wish for their happiness, wish for them to be free from suffering.
It sounds small.
It is small, but doing it consistently acts like a little workout for your heart. It trains your mind to shift away from constant self-focus towards genuine empathy for others.
I like that. Okay, one more.
Yes. Tip four, implement something like an 80-20 rule for responsibility, particularly when you're in conflict with someone.
How does that work?
Even if you truly believe the other person is, say, 90% responsible for the argument or the problem, you deliberately focus on taking full ownership of your 10%, your own emotional reaction, your anger, your hurt feeling.
Ah, so you focus only on what you control.
Exactly. By acknowledging that your feeling is your internal response, you shift from blaming the outside world, playing the victim, to taking back control. That move from victimhood to empowerment is absolutely central to the whole teaching.
That's powerful. So reflecting on all this, what really stood out or surprised you most from diving into this material?
For me, it was probably that radical idea about the usefulness of suffering. We're so conditioned to see pain as just bad, something to avoid. But the book reframes it, not suggesting we seek it out, obviously, but showing how we can actually leverage inevitable hardship.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing that adversity can be a tool to deepen your empathy, to build resilience. That just fundamentally changes your relationship with difficulty. It's less terrifying.
That's a great point. What I think I appreciated most is the profound sense of empowerment it offers.
Mm.
The core message is that our well-being is genuinely, primarily, in our own hands.
Yeah.
We're not just passive victims of our circumstances or our brain chemistry. We are the active architects of our inner world. The mind can be the source of suffering, absolutely, but it's also the primary instrument we have for achieving liberation from that suffering.
It really encourages you to take a hard look at your life, doesn't it? To audit your goals. Are they mostly based on those external metrics, the job title, the bank balance, or are they geared towards internal states finding meaning, fostering connection, cultivating peace?
That's the challenge.
So maybe a final thought for everyone listening. Consider reorienting just one key goal this week. Try focusing it entirely on achieving an internal state rather than hitting an external target. See what happens.
The beautiful and definitely challenging call to action.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.